Well, friends, I've had so many positive responses to last week's message that I decided I'd preach it again today. I was going to ask for testimonies, but that's probably not appropriate. Let's move right into the message this morning. Foolish ramblings. A number of years ago, when my sister and I were just little kids, I don't know where my mom was, but she asked a guy in our church to look after us. Now, this wasn't just, we had babysitters when we were younger. We had usually young adults that would look after us or people who were in their younger years who would look after us. But this was a man in our church who was much, much older. I think my mom was just desperate that someone would take care of us. And I remember we went to his apartment and he was sitting there and he had nothing cool. I mean, he was a single man. He had no toys. He had no crayons. He had no paper. He had nothing. I mean, it was a boring place. And so we're trying to entertain ourselves, and we keep saying, hey, can we do this? Can we do this? And I can tell that we're like 5 minutes into our visit there, into this babysitting moment, and he's already exhausted. I mean, he doesn't, his kids are all grown up, and they have kids of their own. This is an elderly gentleman, and he is exhausted, and we kept on talking and talking and talking, and hey, why don't we do this, and hey, how about this, and the more we talked, the more tired he got. And all of a sudden, he did something that at that moment, when I was a kid, I thought that he was the most generous person in the world. He said, hey, I got a game, and he said, I'm willing to give $2 to the person who can be the quietest in the next little while. I thought, man, this guy is so generous. And so I said, okay, so we're not allowed to say anything. He says, if you both can stay absolutely quiet and say nothing, then you'll get the $2. Now, if you know me, I'm very competitive. And so I was like, I'm not losing this $2. I can buy some hockey cards with this $2. And so for the next, I don't know, probably the rest of the night, my sister and I are just like looking at each other. I'm trying to make her laugh, but we refused to say anything. And I think at the end of the night, he was so impressed that he gave each of us $2. I thought, man, he's just a generous older man. He was a smart man. A smart man, because he knew that the best way to deal with somebody, especially someone little who keeps rambling and rambling and rambling, is to play the quiet game, which is a game that I've played many times with kids who've been around me not knowing what to do. You play the quiet game. Have you ever been with somebody who just keeps rambling and you think to yourself, I really wish I could invite them to play the quiet game? You know, you're in a conversation, maybe you're at Starbucks, or maybe you're on the phone with somebody and you're trying to get a word in, but they just keep talking and talking and talking, and you're just thinking, when are they ever going to ease up? There's just no pause. It's like they just have play. There's no pause at all, and they just keep talking, and you're thinking, please, 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 please be quiet. You just want them to play the quiet game, but they keep rambling. Now, as irritating as it is to be with somebody who's a rambler, somebody who keeps talking, the Bible actually says that it's not just an irritating element that comes from somebody who talks a lot. There's actually the potential for sin. That as we share many things from our mouth, as we communicate incessantly, that there's this opportunity for us, not necessarily for the good, but this opportunity for us to sin. And I want us to look at our proverb today. It's found in Proverbs chapter 10, I believe it's 18 to 21, and it says this. Whoever conceals hatred with lying lips and spreads slander is a fool. Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for a lack of sense. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 18 to 21. Solomon talks about the danger of our tongue. The danger of rambling. And he says, where there's a lot of talk, where people just keep talking, keep talking, keep talking, keep talking, eventually there's going to be sin. And he points out some things. He says that there's the opportunity to lie with our mouth. There's the opportunity to slander somebody with our mouth. I don't have a problem with the lying. That's one of the things that I've not struggled with in my life. But I got to confess, the slander is, it's easy to cut someone down. It's one of the areas that I just constantly have to bring to the cross. He says, useless speech. There's times where we talk and it's just useless. You ever been with somebody and just like, who cares? Useless speech. And then there's unwise comments. people who just, you know, just say something, just unwise, you know, oh, and by the way, just that final dig, just this useless comment, the unwise comment. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 7 says that there's a time for all things in life. In fact, it says that there's a time to be silent and there's a time to speak. There's an appropriate time. God gave us our mouth, but friends, let me just tell you something. Your mouth doesn't have to be used. There are times where God's given you this thing, that he's given it to you to be quiet, and there are times that he's given it to you so that you can speak, that there's the appropriate times. If we are going to choose to live a foolish path, be on that foolish path, we're going to use it a lot. We're going to use our mouth. We're going to speak incessantly. We're going to keep rambling, ramble, ramble, ramble. And eventually, something's going to slip out that we shouldn't have said. But the foolproof person, the person who wants to live righteously, the person who wants to live wisely, will know when they should let speech come from their mouth. And I think in this passage, we see three types of speech. And I want to look at these three, because these are the times that you should speak, the time to speak, the time to not be silent. The first is controlled speech. Verse 19 says, "He who holds his tongue is wise." Now, I know that Solomon is not talking about us actually physically tongue and just holding like that and controlling everything we're going to say. We know that that's not what he's talking about. We know that he's talking about taking control of the words that come out of our mouth, but he uses this picture in such an incredible way so that we would understand that we actually have to take control of our mouth, or else it's going to say something that will lead us in a path that we shouldn't go. It will take us down a path. I don't know about you, but there have been so many times I've gone, "Why did I say that? Why did that slip out of my mouth?" Anybody want to confess with me? You've done that? You don't mean to be malicious. You don't mean to say something, but all of a sudden you've let go of your tongue and it's taking you in a direction that you don't want to go. I remember when Ainsley and I were helping out with a youth group in Oshawa, we were going on this youth retreat and somebody had lent us their car. And as we drove up to Muskoka Woods, there was an incredible snowstorm, and it's nighttime, and you know in the wintertime there's not much light outside, that you rely on the street lights. You had a snowstorm, a blizzard to that, and it's just impaired visibility. And so we start to drive and everything's fine. I'm thinking to myself, I'm Canadian, I know how to drive through winter storms. And all of a sudden on Highway 12, as I'm heading up to Muskoka Woods, I hit black ice. Anybody ever hit black ice before? I mean, I've had complete control of the car up to this moment, but as soon as I hit that black ice, the car starts to go in a direction that I don't intend it to go. And it starts to veer for another car. My heart's panicking. I don't know what to do, because as much as I want to take control of the car, the black ice is in control of the car, and it's sending me, and I'm about to hit this car with this borrowed car, and all I can picture is this massive accident, me hitting the corner, hitting black ice again, spinning out, having this big multi-car collision to start our youth retreat. But at the last moment, as my car is about to hit this car, all of a sudden, the tires grab traction on the road, and I'm fine. And all of a sudden, I got control again, and I go for a couple more seconds, and then I hit black ice again, and I start to head the other way. The same thing, start to go towards another car. My heart starts to panic. I believe I'm going to hit this other car. I don't want to hit the car. I don't want to go this direction, but the black ice is taking control. And at the last second, just before I hit it again, once again, the tire grabs traction with the road. And finally, I gain control of the car and drive all the way up to the retreat, and we were safe. It was safe. But I, that moment, I appreciate that moment where I was taking control, the clear ground without the black ice. I appreciate the pavement so much, because in that moment, I could take control of my car and take it where I want it. But whenever I hit black ice, I knew that I would go in a direction I didn't want to go. You see, friends, some of us have lots of black ice moments with our mouths. We find ourselves sliding into places that we don't intend to go. We're driving along, and all of a sudden something wells up, and often it's our emotions, often it's anger, or it's this need to be accepted, and we speak something. We find ourselves on black ice, not taking control of our speech, and we just say something that we shouldn't. We get into an we don't want to cut people up. We don't want to be arrogant. We don't want to do things that break the heart of God. But whenever we lose control inside, we're likely to lose control right here. Whenever it becomes something of pride, whenever it becomes something of anger, whenever we lose control inside, we will lose control of our tongue. Solomon says we've got to keep control of our tongue. I remember when I was in public school, there was this kid who was a year below us. And this kid was a bit of an obnoxious kid. His name was Sean. And he was always wanting to hang out with the older kids. But none of the older kids ever wanted to hang out with him because he was just an annoying kid. He would just always say the things that would irritate you. And I don't even remember what they were. I just remember every time he came around, it was just irritating. We had these monkey bars in our playground, and there was this game that we would play where you would hold on to the monkey bars, and you would face an opponent, and you had then swing your legs up, and you would try to wrap your legs around the other person's body and begin to twist and turn so that they would fall down, so they'd let go of the monkey bars. And the person who was able to get the other person to drop first would win. This one day, Sean started to annoy me, and he said, hey, want to have a monkey fight? I wanted to have more than a monkey fight with this kid. But I said, sure. He said, well, let's make this interesting. So what do you have in mind? He said, you guys play soccer every recess and every lunch hour, and I keep asking you if I can play, but you never let me. If I beat you, I play for the entire week. And he said, and if you win, I won't ask you ever again to play soccer. I thought, man, this is a sweet deal. I mean, I'm an upperclassman. I'm pretty much a pro in the whole monkey fight business. I probably will go to the Olympics someday for monkey fights. This is incredible. I will beat him. This is the best deal ever. And so we got onto the monkey bars and began to swing. And I don't know what happened that day. I don't know if I was sick or if I had callousism. I don't know. But something happened, and Sean beat me. And that meant for the rest of that week, Sean would have to play soccer with us every recess and every lunch hour and before school. That's four times a day. Four times a day he has to hang out with us. It was going to be the worst week of my life. At the same time that week, I was seeing a girl from my class. I mean, this is like grade three, grade four. And I've told you this before. Seeing a girl, I mean, it didn't mean anything. I never ever held her hand. We never kissed, never hugged her. It just simply meant that she was committed to me and I was committed to her. And we first base was standing in line together. I mean we would just stand together. That was us dating, and if you had reading time, we would sit beside each other. That's what seeing somebody meant. And so I was seeing this girl in my class. We were going together. And so the week went on, and every day Sean was playing soccer, couldn't wait till it was done. And yet I had this joy in my life because I was going with this girl. Then Friday came. And in the second recess, one of my girlfriend's friends came to me. This is the way it works. You never confront one-on-one. To let me know that she was dumping me. But not only was she dumping me, she was dumping me for my best friend. I thought I'd get more sympathy than that. I mean, I was gutted for my best friend, Chris. She was dumping me for him. And I got to tell you, I know that we were never going to get married. And I know when I look at not just primary school, but I look at even junior highs who are devastated. They've been dating for 6 hours and they break up. And it's just like, my life is falling apart. And we look at it as ridiculous. But I was gutted. I mean, I was gutted. I mean, my emotions were all over the map. This good-looking girl who I was planning the house and white picket fence with. She had broken up with me, but not just broken up with me, for my best friend. She stabbed me in the back, and my friend stabbed me in my back, and I was emotionally distraught. But this was the last day as Sean was playing soccer for us. And after the game, school ended that day, and here I am, I'm emotionally upset. Sean comes up to me, and he says this. He says, hey, Jeff, you must be so happy now that the week is over, now that I don't have to play soccer with you every day. and being out of control with my emotions because this girl broke up with me, I looked at him and I said, it's the best day of my life. Now, friends, I know that that may not seem like a very mean statement, but I've reflected on it. This kid looking up to an upperclassman, and I'm telling him that the best day I've ever had in my life is the day that he's not allowed to play soccer with me. This cutting word, this word that told him that he was useless, that was just super negative. I mean, my emotions about this girl breaking up with me caused me to let my words be reckless, and I took a cheap shot at Sean. I never wanted it to go that direction. I never wanted to hurt him. I wasn't about being a mean kid or a bully. I don't know what the impact was. I don't know if he went back to his house and cried, or maybe he didn't care at all. But some upperclassman said that the best day of his life was when he couldn't play soccer with them anymore. How many times do we let something inside affect what comes out here? The anger. This is where I struggle, where I get angry and all of a sudden I say something I don't mean to say. I just snap. I don't have control of my speech. My emotions are out of control, and so I just, I didn't mean to say that. Or moments where I'm with somebody and I want to impress them, and so rather than controlling my words, I say something that's cutting. You ever been with somebody and they start to talk about somebody else? And you want to be accepted, so even though you don't want to cut that person up, you join in with the conversation because your emotions say, hey, you need to be accepted right now. And what takes place inside, the lack of control inside, leads to a lack of control right here. Friends, I want to tell you, if you come to a place where you're feeling a lack of control inside, shut your mouth. I don't mean that rudely, but yeah, shut your mouth. If you are in a state where you want to be accepted, you're in a state where pride's there, you're in a state where anger's there, you're in a state where something internally is out of control, I guarantee you, you will say something that you don't mean to say. And you can't control this if you don't control this. And when this is out of control, keep this closed. There's a time to be silent and a time to speak. When this is out of control, this needs to keep quiet. Controlled speech. The second thing that Solomon tells us is that we should use valuable speech. Verse 20 says this, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver. Choice silver. Righteous people speak something of value. You ever notice that there are people that you're with and you talk to them and you go, yeah, I got nothing from them. I mean, it's like you had a conversation, but there was no value to their life, from their life. But there are certain people that you're with, and when you're finished the conversation, they have just poured something into you. There's such value from their words. There's wisdom. There's life. There's kindness. You listen to the words and you go, man, that is just so good. There are certain people in my life that I want to be with because I know that whatever they say is going to produce incredibly valuable words. You see, friends, it's very easy to speak. Those of us who learned at a young age how to communicate, we figure that now here we are in our adult years or in our teen years, and we've got good mastery of our speech skills. It's easy to speak, but how easy is it to speak something that's valuable? This guy joins a Trappist monastery, and the rules of this monastery is that when they had to enter the monastery, they had 3 years that they had to commit to being there. And it was an interesting proposal for those who want to join the priesthood because they wanted to teach them about the importance of only sharing valuable words. And so the deal was is that in the first year, they were not allowed to say anything for the full year until the very last day, and then they were given permission to speak 2 words. The same would happen in the second year, and then the same would happen in the third year. And then the next day after the 3 years had been done, they could speak regularly, just like you and I. But two words each year to teach them about the importance of speaking valuable words. This man joins, and year one goes by. He's not allowed to say anything. Comes to the end of the first year, and it's now his opportunity to say 2 words, and he says this, bed hard. High priest just nods and goes, okay. Year two, no words spoken. Gets to the last day. He says, food cold. like, all right, bed hard, food cold. Year three, last year, he's just got to get through this last year. Says nothing for the third year. Last day, now the priest says, okay, you got two words. What do you say? I quit. The priest looks at him and says, well, that doesn't surprise me at all. Ever since you got here, you've been complaining. It's easy to complain. It's easy to say negative things. I mean, think about this. He has the opportunity to share something valuable with his two words, something incredibly valuable. But what he chooses to do with his two words is to say something that has no value, something that's critical, something that's negative. Let me ask you, if you only had two words each year, would they be critical words? Would they be complaining words? Or would they be words that are incredibly valuable? Over the 21 years of ministry, the 21 years I've been in ministry, I have been in unbelievable amount of meetings. I mean, meeting after meeting after meeting. And ministry and meeting are almost on the same page. And in those meetings, I've noticed that there are people in meetings that will speak an awful lot. And there are times I'm in a meeting where I'll listen to someone speak, and as soon as they open their mouth, I go, okay, I'm just not listening. Because I know they don't bring value. And the majority of time in the meetings that I'm in, there are people who will sit quietly and not say anything through the whole meeting. And then just at the right moment, they'll say, hey, can I just say something? And what they say in just that little moment is incredibly valuable to the meeting. I was in Texas a number of years ago with our national youth team, and we were having a discussion on discipleship amongst teenagers. We were trying to figure out the way that we could help our youth pastors get kids to be true disciples of Jesus Christ. We weren't looking at just getting them to attend church or attend our events. We wanted them to truly follow what it meant to be like Jesus, to do the things that Jesus did, to speak like Jesus spoke. And so we had this long discussion. I remember we had like a chart board, and my buddy Paul was up, and he's writing things down, and the conversation's going back and forth. And we're talking about all kinds of radical things. We're talking about shutting down our youth conventions. We're talking about canceling our camps. We're talking about making vows to each other about the way we're going to lead. I mean, we were just back and forth arguing, and I mean, it was good discussion for about an hour. And there in the corner was my friend Jim Malloy. Jim is the director, one of the church ministry's director down in the Maritimes, and Jim will always say something, but he had been silent for the entire meeting. And all of a sudden, Jim just puts up his hand, and George Werner looks at Jim and says, "Okay, Jim, go ahead." And Jim's just kind of sitting back in his chair, and he says, "One time I was in an airport. We were coming into an airport, and we were in the plane." And the plane just kept circling the airport. And it circled the airport, and it circled the airport. And then he stops talking. We're talking about discipleship. And all of a sudden, he just says this story about a plane. It wasn't even a good story. And he just pauses, and George starts laughing. He goes, "Is that it?" And Jim goes, "Yeah, that's all I got." And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, we're having valuable conversation. Jim, why are you sharing this? And then all of a sudden it hit me. What Jim was saying was, hey, guys, you just keep rambling. It's like a plane that just keeps circling the airport. At some point, you got to land the thing. And as I sat there and all of a sudden it hit me what he was saying, I thought, he just spoke the most valuable thing that's been said in this room in the last hour. It's the only thing of that conversation I remember till this day. There are moments that we're speaking and we're talking and people are listening and we can hear ourselves and we may sound impressive to ourselves. But the question is, are we actually adding value to the conversation? Friends, before you speak, you need to ask the question, is this actually valuable? Like, I'm not saying you can't have chit-chat conversations. But you do need to ask yourself, is this something valuable? And if I don't say it, will there be any impact? And if I do say it, is there going to be any impact? Ainsley is not much of a sports fan. During World Cup, I'm really thankful because she's Dutch, and so she'll cheer for Holland, and we'll be right into it, but she barely watches sports with me. But this one time, we were watching basketball, the playoffs. I don't even think she was watching. I think she was on her iPad or something like that. And it was right near the end of the game. There was like 3 seconds left, and the losing team had called timeout, and the commentators are going on. Because, you know, like the last 3 seconds are longer than the rest of the game, right? Like in some sports. Timeout. Commentators are talking as the coaches are talking to their squad about what to do. And one of the commentators says this. He says, what needs to happen now is this team that's losing needs to get the ball and get it into the net. And Ansley turns to me and she says, are you kidding me? This is why I don't watch sports. I was like, what? She says, seriously, this guy gets paid to do this? I could do that. Everybody knows he's got to get the ball into the net. That's not valuable. That doesn't help us out. Maybe talk about the strategy. Maybe talk about which players he should play. Maybe talk about the formation that they should have. But to say he needs to get the ball in the net, we don't need your help for that. It's not valuable. Here's the question I want to ask you. How are you contributing in your speech? How are you contributing to the people around you? Are you somebody who speaks solutions, or are you simply good at identifying the problems? By the way, I know that there are many people in here who are good at finding the problems. And usually the people in here who come and talk to me about the problems, they're surprised because I know about the problem before they even have to address it to me. I realize there's a problem. Everywhere I've gone, there have been people who are brilliant at talking about the problems. I need people who can help me with the solutions. People who contribute value. Don't say, oh, Pastor, we're not doing enough of this. We're not. Tell me how we can do it. Tell me what you're willing to commit. Contribute something of value. We need people who give wisdom, not just fodder. You know, fodder doesn't matter. Like just stuff that's just blah 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 blah. Doesn't help out. We need wise people. We need people like the men of Issachar who understood the times and seasons and knew exactly what to do. Friends, we need people who are incredibly wise who will step in and say, hey, I think this is what God wants us to do. We need individuals who hear from God in this place, who say, I've heard from God, this is where we should go. Not just for the church, but for your homes and for your businesses and for everywhere you go, that you would be people of wisdom contributing like Daniel did to the places all around you. Let me tell you this. Your bosses will be impressed with you. Young people, listen. Your bosses will be impressed with you if you're people of wisdom. If you step in and don't just identify the problem, but you come in and say, hey, I got a solution. I've got something that we should do. And if you hear from God with the wisdom that he'll give like Daniel did, you'll be world influencers. Wisdom. Not only that, but you need to be people who speak with purpose, not just privilege. I got a relative who always tells me that it's her right to speak. I'll say something, and I'm like, yeah. Well, I have a right to say that. She's declaring her privilege. God's given me a mouth, so I'm allowed to open it up. Well, thank you for your privilege. I just wish you had purpose with those words. Friends, yeah, we all have privilege to speak. We all have a voice. We live in a democratic society, in a democratic church. But please speak with purpose. Please speak something of value. Because if you choose things that are just privilege over purpose, you'll fall into sin. You'll say something that's from pride, something that's from arrogance, something that's from your emotions. We need to speak valuable speech. Controlled speech, valuable speech, and lastly, nurturing speech. Look at verse 21. Verse 21 says, the lips of the righteous nourish many. And this word nourish means to pasture, to tend, or to graze. It's this idea of shepherding. It's leading people to the place where they can eat and get life. The Bible says that those who are righteous will be like a shepherd who lead people with their words to the place where they get life. You ever met somebody who you want to just get around them because they always lead you to life? You're finished with them and you have a passion that's greater for God. You start to dream more for your life. You believe that you can do it even though everybody else around you says you can't. They've led you to the place where you're nurtured. You're eating. I just need more of this. I just want more. You see, as you are a shepherd and you have the opportunity to nurture people with your words, whatever you place before them will either bring them life or take life away from them. A few weeks ago, we were out with a couple from the church. This couple is very involved in this church, and they were the wife was just telling me that she hears a lot of things through her ministry. It's just a lot of things of what's going on in people's lives in our church and the things that are taking place. And then all of a sudden, she says, "I even hear what people say about you, Pastor." And I just kind of laughed at first, and I went, People say things about me? I mean, what else would I expect? I'm the leader of a church, and anytime you're in leadership, people talk about you. But all of a sudden, I felt sick. I was like, what are people saying? What are they talking? And then she says, "Hey, do you want to know what they're saying?" And I was like, because my personality is like, yeah. I mean, the words came out before I could even process it. But in my stomach, I'm feeling sick inside. Like, physically, I'm like, all of a sudden, there's this knot in my stomach, stress. Acid's burning my chest. What are people saying about me? In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, no, what problems do we have at the church now? Well, what's going on? Do I have a coup? Are people asking for my head? I mean, I'm thinking the worst. And she says, "You really want to know?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "You are incredibly well respected in our church." I did. Thank you. Now, she only listened to two people, so I don't know how true that is. But the moment she said that, all of a sudden, all the acid stopped. All of a sudden, the sickness left, and life came over me, and I said, "Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more." You see, people will feed on the words that you have for them. They'll feed on it. Friends, you have the opportunity to place food in people's lives. Food that's either going to make them feel sick about themselves or food that's going to bring them incredible life. Incredible life. They'll feed on whatever you give, life or death. These two frogs are hopping along this one day. Not a true story. These two frogs are hopping along this one day, and they fall into this deep, deep pit. And, I mean, they're trying to jump out of the pit. Well, the rest of the frog family comes around, and they seem to be cautious because they can hear the hopping inside the hole. And so they gather around the hole, and the frogs start to yell down to them and you know, encourage them for a little season. And so these two frogs are jumping and jumping and jumping. And as the frogs, I mean, it's a very short season of encouragement. And finally, the frogs realize that this hole is so deep, there's no way these two frogs are getting out of the hole. So the frogs that have gathered around the hole, they start to yell out, "Just give up and die. Just give up and die. There's no way you can make it." And they're waving their two front legs. They're just give up and die. Just give up and die. Just give up and die. Well, after a few moments, the one frog takes heed to the words that they spoke, quits hopping, lays in the corner and dies. The other frog just keeps jumping with everything he's got. And the more they yell at him, telling him to stop, that there's no possible way that he can get out, the more he jumps higher. And they keep yelling, "Just give up, you're going to be exhausted, you're going to die, just enjoy your last few moments in the hole, just give up." And they're just waving furiously, and they're full of passion, and the frog just keeps jumping, and to their surprise, the frog jumps right out of the hole. The frogs gather around this frog, and they said, What in the world happened? We kept telling you to give up and die. And you just kept jumping even higher. Oh, that's what you were saying. He said, "I'm almost deaf, and I thought you were cheering me on. And the more passionate you got, the more I felt like you were behind me. And so I jumped my way out of the hole." You see, friends, if you got people in your life who are cheering you on, if you got people in your life who are saying, "You can get out of the hole," if you got people who will step into your life full of passion and say, "You're not done, you're not going to die, you're not going to be taken over by this problem," if you got people in your life who step into you, who are cheering you on, you have the ability to jump out of any situation because you'll grab hold of the life that they give you. Food of life, food of life. You see, friends, we have this opportunity to nurture people with our words. I want to be a church when people walk in this place that we speak words that are like a bowl of healthy food. that when they eat of the words that we place before them, they go, oh, I feel so good. I feel I can take on life. I can feel like I can go for another 6 or 7 days. I just so enjoy being around this church because they speak words of life. They keep encouraging me. They keep cheering me on. They keep telling me I can do it. I want to be part of a church like that. Nurturing words. So Solomon says that we need to have controlled speech. We need to have valuable speech. And we need to have nurturing speech. Last animal story. There was an unlikely friendship way back, parable. It was a friendship of two geese and a tortoise. And they hung out at this pond for many years, and they had this great friendship. And now over the years, the pond started to disappear. And finally, because of nature and all that's taking place with the environment, the pond actually went completely dry. These two geese began to talk with the tortoise, and they said, listen, we've got to move from here because water is our life. Water is what keeps us going. And so we've got to go find another pond. We're going to have to fly to another pond. The tortoise was standing there thinking, I can't get there like you can. I can't get there. And so the tortoise said, hey, could you take me? Could you take me to the next pond? I mean, we're friends, and they start thinking, they're like, no, there's no possible way. You're too heavy for any one of us to carry. There's no possible way. But please, we're friends. I just need to get to the pond with you. The two geese start to think, and they said, okay, we have an idea. We're going to find a stick, and so they found the stick, and we're going to carry the stick in each of our beaks. And what we want you to do is we want you to grab hold of the middle of the stick with your mouth and hold on to it tight. And we will fly you to the next pond. The tortoise was so excited, his life was going to be saved. And so the two birds grabbed that stick, put it in their mouths. The tortoise grabbed hold of the stick, chomped down on it. And they began to rise, and he was blown away. He'd never seen the view that the geese had seen. And as they're flying towards the pond, all of a sudden some humans start to see this picture. I mean, can you imagine two geese flying with a tortoise? You know, the stick between their mouths. And the humans start pointing, and they start laughing, and they actually start to mock. Well, the tortoise gets angrier and angrier. And finally, after a short season of being mocked, the tortoise is so upset inside, he feels the need to defend himself, and he says, hey, let me tell you. And as he opens his mouth, he lets go of the stick and falls to his death. And the principle of this story is, sometimes when you open your mouth, you die. Have a good week. Friends, I'm just telling you that there are so many moments when we open our mouths and the only thing that comes from it is death. It's better to be silent sometimes than to be the foolish rambler. This is what I'm going to ask. I want you just to bow your heads for a second. We're going to do something really practical. I do want to give a salvation call. Pastor Steve and Jess, would you just come back for just a moment? Friends, I just want to, for everybody's heads bowed, eyes closed, you're in this place and you've never, ever given your life to Jesus. I mean, the excitement that's here, the life that's here, the principles we're learning, they're from God. And he wants to call you into the relationship, and you can't do it by working. You can't do it through your own righteousness. The Bible says that we're all sinners falling short of the glory of God. But Jesus died on the cross for you, and he wants to have a relationship with you. And if you'd believe that he died and rose again, placed himself on a cross in your place, and you ask him to be in charge of your life, he'll come in. Is there anybody in this place that say, Pastor, I've never done that, but I want to give my life to Jesus this morning? No one's looking around, just you and me. If you want to give your life to Jesus this morning, just raise your hand really quickly. Thank you at the back. Thank you so much. Anybody else? You want to give your life to Jesus? You want him to be in charge? All right, for this young lady, I believe, at the back, I'm going to ask you to either talk to one of your friends who brought you, or if you wouldn't mind, just come to the front, just to the front after the service is done. There will be somebody who will meet you, and they'll give you instructions on what's next, and they'll lead you in the sinner's prayer, and you will join a brand new relationship with God. I just encourage you to come to the front after the service. This is how we're going to end this morning, friends. We're not going to have this big altar call or a big spiritual moment. But I want you all to stand up for a moment. I want to be a church that speaks things that are spoken in control, speaks things that are valuable, full of wisdom, proactive from God. I want to be a church that speaks nurturing words that bring life, cheering people on. I want to live the foolproof life. And what I'm going to ask this morning is something that may make you feel uncomfortable. I'm not asking it to be long. But I want you just to turn right now to somebody you know. And I want you just to take just a couple moments, maybe 30 seconds each. And I want you just to say something of life to them. Somebody you know, I want you just to speak a word of life, something about who they are. Don't compliment their shirt or anything like that. I mean something substantial of character. I want you to say, this is what I see in you, and this is what I like about you. Speak something of life. So everybody just turn right now, find somebody. We're only going to do this for a short period. All right, friends, let me have your attention. I'm going to pray now, but this week, as you leave this place, provide someone with a food, or with a plate of good food. Speak some words of life. This week, as you're at home, speak some words of life. As you're at work, would you speak some words of life? Let us be identified by this world as people who follow Jesus, because we have controlled speech. We speak things of value, and we nurture people with the words that God's given us. Let us live a foolproof life. Jesus, we thank you for the gift of life that you've given us. We thank you so much that you've given us the ability to communicate. It's a great, great gift from you. I just pray, God, that this week we would use our mouths to bless people. God, there are a millions of people who can criticize, millions of people who can slander, millions of people who can lie. But it takes a rare person of integrity who follows you to have control of their words, to speak things of value, and to speak things that will nurture the life and soul of somebody else. Let us be those type of people. Allow us to use our words this week to be a blessing to the people around us. I pray. Now bless this congregation. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a great week, everyone.